Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montsies of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time. Hello there, internet. Before we get started today, just wanted to pop in and say hi. Hope everybody is as healthy and prepared as you can be, right? Things are crazy out there. Not that you need me to remind you of that, but I just wanted to thank you for taking the time out of whatever it is you're able to do in this week, last week, the next couple of weeks to take the time to listen to this podcast. So I hope to provide you guys with a little bit of a distraction from all of the craziness that is going on. If you're listening to this post, like many weeks after it comes out, this is smack dab in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic and everything that is going on. But you know, sometimes it's a good thing to, as much as possible, right, continue with your normal routine so that you don't basically have a full out panic attack, which is basically what every day feels like at this point for a lot of people. So one more thing that I want to remind you guys of as your resident dietitian nutritionist here is that no food, no supplement, no nothing can prevent you from getting a virus like this. So if you're getting calls from people, texts from people, things on Instagram of people like, this can prevent the virus and whatever, it's not, none of that could possibly have been proven. So just keep that in mind. Celery juice can't fix everything, nor can it fix a lot of things. And as we continue to talk about on this podcast, nutrition is powerful, food is powerful, food can be a great tool to use in your healing, but some people take this food as medicine thing way, way, way too far. And some people even take it to the point, you know, my former self included, of it being obsessive and disordered. So just a little reminder for you there, no food can cure this kind of virus or anything like that. Same thing with supplements. Just, you know, wash your hands as best you can and do your best out there. Today, we're going to be talking not about viruses or infectious diseases or anything. We're going to be talking about skin health. So I have invited Jennifer Fugo as the guest on today's episode to talk all of things skin and skin issues. So Jennifer is an integrative clinical nutritionist with a master's in human nutrition who focuses her practice on a functional approach to chronic skin rash conditions. So we're getting a little bit nerdy in this episode, talking about the gut-skin connection, leaky skin. We've talked about leaky gut before, but what the heck is leaky skin? What does that mean? The connection between skin issues and the thyroid. And like I was saying on the intro, here, in the age of food as medicine and diets that proclaim very loudly about how an elimination diet can fix anything and everything, which you guys know isn't true as we've debunked on this show, right? And it can cause sometimes more problems than it's worth. Jennifer, in today's episode, is digging into why cutting out fruits from your diet alone is not going to fix all your skin issues. So let's get right to the show. So Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I would love you to get started by introducing yourself to any listeners who might not have heard of you or your work before, and tell us a little bit more about you and your personal story, personal health journey that led you to where you are today and what you specialize in now.
Well, thank you, first of all, for having me on the show. I really appreciate that. And I'm excited to be here.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana.
If you enjoyed the episode,
please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes. And come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.
And so when I was in grad school, I ended up developing dyshidrotic eczema on my hands. And that was back in 2014. So I was in a very stressful period of my life trying to run a business and going to full-time grad school, and had this crazy, weird rash start on the one side of my middle finger, and it looked like I had bubbles under my skin. And I didn't know what it was, but it would eventually become very itchy. And then those bubbles would burst and this awfully angry red rash would form. And then, you know, after a few days, maybe about a week, it would go away. The skin would calm down and then the cycle would begin again. But the patch kept getting larger and larger and larger. It's almost like this like growing monster on my skin. And I had no capacity to be able to make it stop, with the exception that I am fortunate in that my dad was a doctor. And at the time he gave me some steroid cream, forewarning me to use it as sparingly as possible. But that was the only thing that would bring me some relief in the moment. And so I tried going to dermatologists. I was so proud of myself. I figured out what the name of the rash was and what type of eczema it was before I got there. But you know, I was really disappointed in thinking that, like, you know, it's 2014, 2015, there must be some answer to this. And there's really like not a lot of times when you go to conventional dermatology, they're like, put more steroid cream on. They also advised me to coat the rashes with Vaseline, which, I mean, for pretty much any area of your body, that's really impractical, but especially the palms of your hands. And so the rash kept getting worse and worse. And I ended up with it covering most of the palms, my hands, and then up the fingers. Even some of my fingernails became very deformed as a result of that. And it got to the point where I felt dirty all the time. Like I couldn't touch anything. I couldn't even touch water, which, you know, it doesn't quite make sense to somebody who has no issue where their skin barrier is intact. But when you have cuts, like in the wintertime, I would have what felt like 1,000 paper cuts all over my hands. And to run my hands underwater, it burned so badly. I didn't even get to the soap. Couldn't even get there. And I started to realize that I couldn't go out in public. People didn't want to shake my hand when they met me, and I didn't necessarily blame them. And felt really like the world was kind of falling away, and I was left alone having to deal with this situation. I mean, my family understood and they were supportive, but you lose all sense of confidence and well-being. I would wake up in the middle of the night scratching my skin off. It was not fun. And so kind of a last-ditch thing, I said to my husband, I said, maybe I should quit school. I don't know how I can become a nutritionist and support other people toward their best health if I literally can't touch things anymore. Because I was wearing like blue gloves that I would get. They're like a neoprene type glove from Home Depot to try to not have to wash my hands as much. And I'm like, I just can't do this. Like, this is embarrassing. And he said, look, maybe you just have to try going about it a different way. And I looked at all the websites, the natural websites, and tried a lot of natural remedies. Some things kind of helped manage it, but I really couldn't get relief. And I had already been gluten-free, dairy-free, and egg-free for 6 years at this point. So it wasn't like, you know, most people say, well, just take out gluten, take out eggs, take out, I had already been that way. And so what I figured out as like a last ditch effort on my part was to say, okay, let me go to the drawing board, get rid of all the preconceived notions that I have about how to address this. I really don't have any idea how, but I'm just going to take a wild stab in the dark. And over the course of the next 6 to 8 months, I was able to get the flares to stop. And then eventually the skin healed up and then the nails grew back out correctly. And I built this protocol with supplements and food on my own. And honestly, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone today because it was awful. And I don't know that it was entirely necessary for every single person. I know actually it's not. But I will say this, my personal journey is what drove me here to make sure that every single person that goes to a doctor's appointment and walks out feeling ignored and so hopeless and frustrated, like they've got this box of creams laying around their house that they can't do anything with, and the doctor wants you to go on another topical steroid, you're not alone. You know, I couldn't just walk away from the community that I had kind of lurked in while I was struggling. I mean, I was in a lot of Facebook groups, and seeing the photos as I was on the mend, seeing people with their children or their faces with patches of rash, I just was like, I need to make sure these people know what I've figured out. And I didn't know that what I figured out at the time was just like a little tiny piece of the puzzle. And so my journey has continued to unfold, where I do a ton of research and I'm constantly sharing that. So that's more or less how I got into this whole area.
It's so interesting that, well, first, thank you for sharing all of that, right? And then it's so interesting that so many of us get into this field because of a personal story or a personal connection. And then the like little sliver of the health and nutrition world that really affects us is the one that we then dive so deep into because we've looked for the answers for so long. And then on the one hand, didn't find them through the conventional, let's say, dermatology route, or even through, I thought it was so interesting when you said your dad gave you the steroid cream and he said, make sure you use it sparingly. But then you go to the dermatologist and they're like, well, here's the steroid cream and just, you know, use it whenever you need to. But then learning that, you know, in this case, the food that you thought was going to heal you by taking it out didn't work. So many of the things that you had done research on didn't work. So how did you actually start to figure out what was working?
Well, I honestly, it was more or less by faith. I didn't have any testing. I guessed. And at the time, I guessed that there was probably some level of gut dysbiosis and that I also had nutrient depletions. I also was under so much stress. So I was having blood sugar problems. The mid-afternoon, I would have a total crash and have to nap for like 2 hours and just felt really hungover and awful. And so I realized that I had to get back to cooking because I had been eating like, you know, the gluten-free frozen products because of convenience. I mean, I was, it's hard to run a business and go to grad school at the same time.
Yep, it is.
Yeah. And so that's why I was like, all right, got to clean that up. And I started to pack my diet full of really good sources of protein, number one, because I realized I was a little bit more carb heavy than I probably should have been. And I just needed to get a lot of nutrients in me and again, worked on some like superficial gut things. I mean, honestly, if I knew what I knew now, I probably could have resolved the issue a lot faster, but I didn't know any of the things that I know now. You know, it's the power of hindsight. Like that was quite a while ago. But I will say that it's given me the passion to, like, I've always been that type of person. Even when I was young, I always wanted to leave the world a better place. And I recognize you can't necessarily save the whole world, you know, but I realize in this day and age, we should have better answers. We should have so many more options for people that should be told in those exam rooms. And I'm not trying to like say doctors are bad or anything like that. My dad is a retired physician and, you know, I know many physicians as a result of that. It's just that the way that it's done in conventional dermatology is stuck. And there is a movement of integrative dermatologists that are starting slowly to rethink the way that we're having these conversations to support people going through this. And I feel really proud and grateful to be a part of that movement. Because at the end of the day, skin rashes, despite how people just think it's like a superficial topical thing, living with them can be complete and total hell. You know, there are clients of mine who cannot sleep at night when we start working together. They wake up with blood all over their sheets because they were itching themselves in their sleep. They are miserable. They have their skin burns. I mean, and that's why I don't use that phrase likely, but it can be a life-wrecking experience. And especially if you are not properly advised on how to use topical steroids, that can be an even graver problem. And that's like well beyond eczema. That impacts most chronic skin issues where steroids are prescribed commonly. So I want to do my best to make sure that I don't leave anybody behind.
Yeah. And I mean, that's very admirable. It's very like big of you. And it's also super important too, right? Because there is, I would say, an easier way to go about this, right? It's create one protocol, give it to everybody, like probably make a lot of money and, you know, but it doesn't help the most amount of people because we know one thing is not going to work for everyone. Heck, one thing is not going to work for all the different types of eczema, like you mentioned before. So you mentioned before when you were talking about figuring things out and stuff that you realized there was some gut piece here. So how did you start to discover that gut-skin connection? And can you explain to the listeners more, like, what even is the gut-skin connection?
Absolutely. And that's a great question. So there's a couple of facets to this. The gut has a microbiome in it, right? We know about the bugs that live in the gut and this whole community. But we also have gut function. So there's two almost separate pieces going on. And to be honest with you, initially, when I went into clinical practice, I was actually working mostly with gut problems because if we back up even further, I had chronic diarrhea and food sensitivities and all sorts of things in my early 20s. And I actually had health issues, all those symptoms of like diarrhea, headache, weight gain, all sorts of things that could not be explained and didn't make any sense earlier in my life. And so as a result of that, most of the people I saw were gut issues. And so randomly, I ended up with these people coming into my practice that had skin issues as their predominant complaint. And so I began to address them. I'm like, oh, whoa, functional nutrition tells us everything starts in the gut. And to some degree, that is very true. It's not 100% with skin issues, but, and we can go back to that later, but there is a definite connection because you can have major issues going on in your gut and you not have any gut symptoms, but they show up on your skin. And that is really, really common. There's also a lot of interesting things that can happen. So as an example, if you don't break down protein, right? So you have low stomach acid, proteins aren't broken down appropriately. We know that gut bugs will end up fermenting these proteins. They turn it into these putrefied protein byproducts. There was one really interesting paper that I was able to find that talked about how within about an hour, 50% of those putrefied protein breakdown products move across the gut lumen into the bloodstream. And so for people who have psoriasis, for example, they actually can find in the plaques of psoriasis those putrefied protein byproducts.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then, you know, our gut bugs, our healthy gut bug community, some people may know this or not, and some may not, is that the colon is meant to be acidic. It's not an alkaline environment. So if you've had this mentality that like everything in the body should be alkaline, like just stop. That's not accurate. There are some spots that need to be acidic. The skin is one of them, as is your colon. And the way that the body or the microbiome actually acidifies the colon is by fermenting FODMAP-esque foods, right? So we ferment these starches and they produce these things called short-chain fatty acids. Those short-chain fatty acids, there's a lot of really interesting research that those short-chain fatty acids actually communicate with the skin microbiome, specifically butyrate. And so there's just so many cool connections. I mean, I can say just from a clinical perspective, you know, a lot of times I've had clients that have, number one, as I mentioned before, no gut problems at all. Zero. They poop like a champ, no gas, no bloating, nothing. And yet, if we were to do a stool test, for example, they come back with gut infections. And they're like, how exactly is this possible? Well, it just so happens for whatever reason, this is how your body is telling you something's wrong. I mean, it's sort of seems odd that you wouldn't have any GI issues, but unfortunately, that's been pretty common. There are other people that oftentimes do have GI issues and skin issues, but the skin issues are their driving problem. And so, you know, I look at, are we, number one, chewing our food? Are we able to break it down? And then are we able to absorb it? Because we're not what we eat. We are what we absorb. Because ultimately, if we don't absorb it, we're then feeding it to our microbiome. That can be good. That can be bad. And if the GI tract is really unhappy, it makes absorption difficult, let's just say. And so then you're making very expensive poop because your body really is, it wants to thrive. But if you're not able to absorb the food, you're going to end up pooping it out. And so if our whole goal is to eat as best as we can, we spend and invest money into eating, say, organic and whatnot, you want to make sure that you're actually pulling the nutrients out of it so that your body can thrive. And so that's why I think it's really important to take a look at both of those. I will say with one little caveat here, you know, there is a role for diet in skin issues for sure. If you're eating a junk food diet, if you're, you know, not paying any attention at all, you might want to start there because yes, the quality of, or the nutrient density, so to speak, of your food is going to impact your skin because the skin is, it's very nutrient hungry. It's also the last priority on the totem pole of organ systems. So, you know, you could walk around with wounds in your skin and you're still walking around, but if there's a problem with your heart or your lungs, that's a life-threatening situation. So skin is not quite as important, unfortunately. So if there are other systems of the body, like your thyroid, for example, that are having trouble, usually the thyroid issue has to be balanced first. Or if your mitochondria don't have all the nutrients they need to really thrive and produce ATP, we need to address that first before you'll then see an improvement in the skin.
Yeah. So talking about the thyroid, can you talk about the connection between either like eczema or dry, itchy, flaky skin or psoriasis and thyroid conditions?
Absolutely. So I interestingly had a client. I'm still working with her now. I did a podcast sharing a little bit of her story. She came to me with really, really bad psoriasis. And it was super itchy, really dry. But she also had complaints of feeling really depressed, tons of anxiety. I mean, she even sounded, when we would be on the phone, she sounded like she was on edge all the time. And she admitted to me later that that was absolutely the case, that she just felt, she just did not feel like she was herself at all. So I asked her to go get a full thyroid panel in addition to a bunch of other things. And it turned out that her TSH, which, yeah, okay, it's not the hormone that comes from the thyroid, but it's the communication signal between the pituitary and the thyroid, was at 33, which is really high. I think the highest I had ever seen it before in my practice was 8. 33 is like through the roof. And I said, you really need to go back and speak with an endocrinologist. Like this is a really serious issue. And so they put her on medication. And within a month, she started to feel so much better on so many levels just from that one piece. Now, she's not 100% yet, but that really helped reduce the itching and just her overall symptoms. But I will say this, I mean, you can have low thyroid function, whether it's Hashimoto's or just a subclinical hypothyroidism, and end up with really dried out skin, because dry skin is actually one of the symptoms of low thyroid function. And I do know of people who they didn't know they had a thyroid issue. And so they thought they had a skin problem. It wasn't really a skin problem. It was a thyroid problem. So that's why it's important to say, oh, I don't need just another moisturizer. What actually is going on here? So we can dig a little bit deeper. Because otherwise we're just like throwing darts in the dark and guessing, and people get really frustrated. I mean, I did, I've got like, I can't even tell you how many balms and creams and stuff I had to throw out a couple years after I had bought them. Cause I was like, I tried so many things thinking that it was an outside problem. To some degree it was, but we failed to look inside because dermatology has oriented us to think that our skin issues are exterior pretty much. It's an exterior problem, and that's the only place you need to look.
Right. And that's why it's so important to think of things as a whole or as systems being connected, which is why I still think, and like, look, I understand why, because I know someone's going to come back and say this, like, I understand why there are specialties for different areas of medicine and like different systems of the body and stuff. But I feel like, especially when it's something like this, it's really important to look at things as a whole and how things could be connected, right? Because like you said before, if you think it's just a skin thing, but it's actually a thyroid thing, but if you just go to the dermatologist, they might not check it, right? Or they might not catch it. If you just go to the endocrinologist and it's going the other way, they might not catch that as well.
Absolutely. I'll give you another example of, actually, this goes back to you, to your question about the gut connection. A lot of people with rosacea, you know, it's again, topical treatments for the most part. And I happened to come across a study done or paper done by a Dr. Weinstock. And he had done this really interesting, he was looking at basically his patients. He's a GI doctor. I should specify that. His patients who had ocular rosacea. So what I understand with ocular rosacea is that sometimes that pops out first. So where the whites of the eyes can become kind of pink. And then the facial form on the cheeks and across the nose and the forehead and chin, become red afterwards. And so interestingly enough, he started to notice in his practice that when those patients were treated with rifaximin, their rosacea went away. And so the more he dug, that's where it gets super fascinating, was that he found that a large number of people with rosacea actually suffer with hidden SIBO. And so, you know, this explains why the topical stuff may work for a period of time and then it wears off and you can't get it to stay and you're in this unending pattern of just managing symptoms. But yeah, isn't that really interesting?
Yeah, that is so crazy. As soon as you said rifaximin, I was like, SIBO? What? Yeah. But I mean, I guess that makes sense. So then going back to the gut-skin connection, like, the listeners have heard me talk about leaky gut and intestinal permeability a lot, but what is leaky skin that I've been hearing about lately, and how does that affect eczema and rashes and stuff like that?
Yeah, I did not coin that phrase, by the way. That is something I learned about when I was doing research. I read about it first on Dr. Sarah Ballantyne's website, Paleo Mom. And at the time, I was like, wow, this is really cool, but I didn't understand all the ins and outs about it, but basically it's similar to the whole concept of leaky gut, but you have a skin barrier that also helps keep moisture inside, right? That's one reason why people say, I just can't like put enough moisturizer on. My skin just like dries out. Well, it's because the moisture barrier is compromised. And so the way that we develop leaky skin can happen through a number of ways, chemical exposures. It can happen because of gut microbiome dysbiosis that then impacts the skin. Like I kind of like to think of the gut microbiome as like command central. And if that's skewed, it's probably going to skew what's happening on the skin. So you've got bugs on the skin that may not, that aren't in the right proportions, or like Staph aureus has started to take over, or too much yeast or whatever. Or we could also see where there's issues with a specific gene called filaggrin. And filaggrin actually produces a protein called filaggrin. And that protein, think of it like the mortar mix between the bricks, right? So each brick is a cell and it's there to help seal everything in and keep the bricks nice and tight. But we know with leaky gut, for example, the same thing applies where those junctions between the gut become too great and things can begin sneaking in. So what in this particular instance, we see moisture being lost. We see inflammation, your skin barriers becomes compromised. The pH balance could shift. So if you're using, soaps and things like that, a lot. Right now, we're washing our hands quite a bit because it's cold and flu season and all the other things going on. And it can actually really shift your pH of your skin, which should be around 4.5. And that all of those different factors can cause, in addition to like allergic issues and whatnot, that can cause the barrier to break down. Now, one really cool thing is that, so a lot of people get kind of like nervous about the whole genetic piece. Like, yes, you can have a SNP in filaggrin, but what can you really do about that? I've asked doctors about this and they're like, it's not worth it to really test for it. Because at the end of the day, what you need to do is try to get more histidine into your diet. So histidine is an amino acid that unfortunately, one little problem is that histidine tends to get converted to histamine. So if you have a lot of histamine issues, might not be a good idea to test this out. But there is some really fantastic research showing that participants who took about 4 grams of histidine in the morning every day for a month saw a significant improvement in their skin that was pretty similar to, I think it was like a mid-potency corticosteroid. And it's because the filaggrin protein itself has a pretty high percentage of histidine. So this is another reason why I tell people, I'm like, you have to eat enough protein in order to correct your skin. Like, there is a protein component to this. And a lot of times, this kind of goes back to the gut, but a lot of times when people have trouble breaking down protein, like they don't feel good on it, they get acid reflux if they had a burger, or they're like, I don't know, my skin goes crazy after I eat meat, but I took meat out and I feel better. And I'm not saying anybody has to eat meat. You can certainly be a vegetarian or vegan or pescatarian or whatever. But if you take proteins out and you notice an improvement, my first question to you is, huh, do you think you're not able to break proteins down? And that's usually the case where there's not enough stomach acid. So we use all of these clues as an important way of figuring out where the issues are in a person's particular case, because not everybody has the same issues. But protein intake is important. And I've spoken with some clients, potential clients, I should say, who were eating like, I don't think they were even getting 20 grams of protein a day. And I said, look, you can't eat that little of protein and feel better. You've got too many symptoms. You've got too many problems. And unless you're willing to compromise on that, I don't think I'm going to be the right fit for you. I like to be very straight with people, but that's how important protein is. And good protein sources, protein powders can be helpful if you need support in getting your levels up. I usually try to help people shoot for like 70 to 80 grams a day if they're working on their skin.
Awesome. So talking about food, one of the main things I try to do on this podcast, as we, mentioned before the call, is functional nutrition from a non-diet approach. And I want to go back to this because when you were telling about your personal story, you were saying how, you had cut out gluten and dairy and all these other things, and like nothing seemed to be working, even though everything that you were reading was saying like, oh, it's definitely going to work. Like, cut out this for skin health and this and this. And right now we're in such an age of like, food is medicine and an elimination diet can fix anything. Like, most people would probably assume that if they do have a skin condition, and with this gut-skin connection that we've been talking about, the easy fix, aside from medication, which we know doesn't actually work well in the long term, the easy fix here would be to do an elimination diet or cut out dairy or nuts or eggs or something like that to fix their skin condition. But I'd love for you to talk more about why restricting and cutting foods out from your diet probably won't actually fix your skin rashes and stuff that we've been talking about.
I wish we had all day to talk about this. This is one of my favorite topics.
Lecture series.
I kind of rail on this in my own podcast because I've worked with too many people who've gotten to a point of serious orthorexia and they are so afraid to eat. They have been convinced from reading books I have respect for anybody that writes a book, and I totally understand that some people do find them to be helpful, but I think at this point we've gone way too far with all of these elimination diets as an easy solution for all of your health woes. Most people have very complex issues going on, and to assume that diet alone is going to fix it is, it's short-sighted. You know, you're just, because you go on an elimination diet, well, how's that going to fix an infection? I mean, I'd love to know that. It's not. And if you don't ever bother to look and you keep eliminating food after food after food after food, eventually you get to this point where you're eating maybe like five different things, which I have actually worked with a lot of people that have whittled their way down to such a small number of foods because this person told them to take this out. And then they read this diet book and then they did this. And they are so afraid to introduce anything back in, or to be fair, they've tried and they've noticed everything, their skin, other symptoms flaring up, that it's positioned them against food. And food is no longer seen as nourishment. They know they have to have it, but it's this constant almost war that they are in with food. They just want this diet that's going to fix them. Except we know that not all health issues and health concerns and symptoms and what's going on, not everything's food fixable. And, you know, with skin issues, I really feel for people because, you know, they're inundated with a lot of information online of pictures of people that are eating unrealistic diets for what, you know, like you're a woman, let's just say a woman, a very busy, active mom at 45 years old who goes to the gym. She's got a full-time job. She's got three kids. She's constantly on the go. She's looking at stuff online of a 22-year-old vegan who only eats fruit or something like that. And her eczema cleared up. So maybe I should do that. Or that it's the celery juice thing, or it's any number of things that it's just the one thing. If I just do that one thing, and it breaks my heart because I have worked with so many people that have put themselves into this very, I mean, it's a precarious situation. I'm sure you've had this experience of clients that come in, they're afraid to eat. They think things like avocados or blueberries or any number of things are like really bad for you. They're afraid of lectins. They're afraid of nightshades. I mean, I've been asked about, or salicylate foods, I get asked a lot about because there's a lot of connections with that and eczema. I'm like, let's try to stop for a second and say, okay, what if it's not the food that's causing the problem? I mean, yes, it's certainly possible to have food allergies. It's certainly possible to have sensitivities to food, but I actually really believe that sensitivities to food are more of a sign of a gut issue because the food doesn't cause, the only food that really causes gut permeability from our research that we know of is gluten. So the rest of it didn't do that. If that's the case, then what caused the leakiness? Because the leakiness had to be there before you developed a sensitivity. So that means you have to look at gut function and the microbiome. And so let's take a step back and realize we're in partnership with our body, figure out how to intelligently start adding foods back in while supporting the areas that are compromised. So if it's gut function, like you don't have enough stomach acid, or perhaps you don't have enough nutrients to feed your liver detox pathways. So it is making it difficult for salicylate rich foods, which are very healthy, by the way, to be processed correctly, because the salicylate is not, it's not a sensitivity like gluten sensitivity. It's really that your liver has trouble converting that salicylate to something else. And so that's where we see that issue. That's why I tell people, I'm like, it's really that you need glycine, probably some B6, maybe something else. Let's get those packed in there and get those systems running optimally so you can get back to life and stop worrying and fixating on food. But you're right. It's a really tough battle because every single like Facebook group you go in, if you're like, I don't know what to do, you're going to have a pile on of people that say, take this out, take that out. And before you know it, you've got nothing left.
Right. Before you know it, you're not eating anything, or you feel like you're afraid of eating most things because you've heard from one person or another, one source or another, one research study or another that, you know, cutting this out helped or cutting this out helped. And then you cut everything out and you're like, now I'm stuck with just zucchini and carrots. And some people get stuck there and then they work with a practitioner. And if you don't eat a food for long enough and your body's not used to bringing it down, and then combine that with the leaky gut, intestinal permeability, all this other inflammation, you're probably going to have sensitivities to a lot of the foods that you cut out. So I love that's how you said, you know, the goal is to really add foods back in while supporting these areas that are compromised, which then will allow you to add even more foods back in to diversify your diet and get the nutrients that you actually need to break down to help heal the skin, heal the gut and everything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And plus, the other thing, as I said, the skin is a very nutrient hungry organ. So if you're down to 2 foods, 5 foods, whatever it may be, where do you expect to get the nutrition? You know, one thing that I think surprises most clients is they think our body makes most of the nutrients that it needs. That's not the case. It makes very little. It has to have a constant influx, or else we start to essentially cannibalize some what we have. Like, we'll cannibalize muscle tissue if we really end up in a position where we need proteins, for example. Or you just have losses. I mean, some nutrients are water soluble. They don't stay in the system long term. If you're not making enough energy, for example, like ATP, you have difficulty recycling glutathione, which is a master antioxidant. So we have to consider that the body is very complex. We know a lot. There's probably way more that we do not know. But I can tell you that an undernourished body is going to have a very difficult time rebuilding healthy skin because it rebuilds from the inside out. So if the building blocks are not present first, you know, like it is very difficult for that skin to those skin cells to really build correctly from the inside because it moves from the inside out.
Right, which is so interesting because most of the advice that you would get out there if you're having these skin conditions is to restrict. But if you're unnecessarily restricting a bunch of these food groups, and then by association, the nutrients that are associated with these food groups that your body actually needs, your skin's not going to be able to heal.
Right, exactly. And I'll also add to this that I think people sometimes get too narrow focused. Remember I was saying, like, dermatology sort of orients us just to skin. Outside, skin's on the outside, we're looking at the outside of the body, that's it. You have to look at all of the other symptoms you have. And you might go, well, I don't understand how this weird metal taste in my mouth would play a role, for example, in my skin issues. But write it down. And your headaches. And, you know, maybe you've got some, like, restless leg stuff going on at night before bed. Write it all down, because the reality is that all your body is really smart, but the way it communicates to us is super old technology. Like I always say, it's like smoke signals. And we oftentimes don't really know how to translate it. But if you write those down and you work with someone that is looking at a long list and believes in looking at your body from a whole perspective, that can be the beginning of starting to figure out what the root cause issues are and knowing where to dig. If you just go, I have eczema, I'm like, okay, well, what else is going on? It's usually my next question. Tell me about what else is going on. And tell me about your eczema. Eczema presents in all different ways. So does psoriasis. Some people have itchy rashes. Other people don't. Some burn. You know, there are so many different symptoms, and I am this diagnosis. You're not. Your body is trying to communicate to you, and it's your responsibility, if you're going to work in partnership with it, to listen.
Right. So I want to talk about a pertinent topic right now, because it is prime flu season, right? And everyone is washing their hands and every single part of their body like crazy and using antibacterial soaps and everything like that, which, disclaimer, very important for flu season. Wash yourself,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But in terms of skin health, right? In, let's say, in other times of the year. How is being too clean actually not great for your skin?
Being too clean is a problem because we actually have a lot of bugs that live on our skin. So we don't want to get rid of those bugs. And believe it or not, the skin microbiome is made up of bacteria, viruses, fungi, mites. I know that's not, people are like, mites? I'm like, yeah, there's mites that live on the skin normally. And so we want them to interact together to help us maintain this community, so to speak. We can't see it, but it's there. And when we wash our hands, especially with really hard, I think the thing to differentiate here is the type of ingredients that are in the soap, for example. Like, are you using a natural soap product or are you using something that's like hospital grade, right? And like, I've been in a hospital a lot recently, and I have probably been washing my hands a lot more than I would if I was just at home. And my hands completely dry out because they're meant to be incredibly stripping. And that's what they do. They strip away those bugs. They strip away the lipid. It's actually called a lipidome. That's what your microbiome on the skin is. It'll strip away all the lipids, and that can cause a lot of irritation. And eventually, if that continues, can lead to cracking of the skin, and this sort of like leaky skin situation. So I think the first thing to realize is that in general, we don't need to scrub our entire bodies when we get into the shower. You might not even have to actually shower every single day. I would say wash the quote unquote critical bits and parts, and then be judicious. Like right now, because eczema was on my hands, I have considered going back and getting a pair of gloves to wear out in public. It makes me cringe slightly because I'm like, are we really there? But I cannot risk my hands drying. I mean, it was two washes and my hands were so dried out and really, really not in great shape. And so I think you have to know what your body's tolerance is, but also making sure that your whatever you moisturize your skin with, because a lot of people then use moisturizer on their hands, is not loaded with ingredients that also dry out the skin. I'm not necessarily an expert in ingredients. Like Rachel Pontillo is someone who is my go-to for that. And she talks a lot about that. But a lot of commercially produced, you know, stuff, even on like the natural area that's organic, a lot of those products are made with ingredients that will cause the skin to dry out. So you continue to reuse it. And so that's where it becomes important to manage, you know, washing your hands. They say what, 20 to 30 seconds of washing the hands seems to be the sufficient level of hand washing. But I also, I don't touch my face. I sneeze into my elbow, and I do my best to spare my hands as much as possible. But you know, I recognize too with hospital staff and things like that, they may not have that choice. Or if you have young children, it may be difficult. But yes, the hand washing and whatnot is a real, can be a real problem. And I would encourage everyone, if you don't, that's where you may want to break out some sort of really good moisturizer and make sure that you're moisturizing, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a day to make sure to like replace some of those lipids and whatnot that your skin needs.
Awesome. Well, Jennifer, I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on. This has been super informative for me, so I know it'll be super informative for probably all of the listeners too. But before we tell everyone where they can find you, before I let you go, I want to ask a question that I love asking my guests, which is, what is one book that you think everyone should read?
Ooh, that's really tough. I would say The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg.
Awesome. I've gotten that recommendation, I think, before. Yeah, I have definitely gotten that before. I've gotten The Power of Habit, Atomic Habits. A lot of people talk about habits on this podcast.
Yeah, I will say too, I actually didn't. Okay, to be fair, I did not read the book. I listened to the audiobook and it was still good.
Yeah, okay, so. You absorbed it through your ear holes. It's the same thing.
Exactly. But it was an excellent, excellent book and helped me real. And actually, I use that a lot with clients, what he teaches about the cues and whatnot. So like if a client has, you know, because they're not good with breakfast, they want to do a protein shake, but they're like, always forget it in the refrigerator. I'm like, put your car keys in the refrigerator with the protein shake or your lunch. So you have to take it in order to get out of the house. So, you know, like it's a really great book if you're looking to be more present. I think there's something about our brain and memory and habits that we have to better understand, right? There's that primitive thing, and when you can tap into it, you can actually use it to your advantage.
I love that. Well, thank you again so much for coming on. Please tell everybody where they can find you, social media, website, podcast, all the things.
Yeah. So I am over at skinterrupt.com. That's my website. I host the Healthy Skin Show podcast, which is a twice a week podcast. And I'm on Facebook, and I mean, Instagram is like, that's a lot me. Like you're seeing my normal everyday life and food and all sorts of things and client cases and things. So people really seem to like Instagram. So that's at Jennifer Fugo. But if anybody has any questions, please feel free to hit me up.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes, and come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.